Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. The war on drugs declared in Mexico in 2006 unleashed a wave of violence across the country. Cartels fought each other for dominance while the Mexican military struggled to gain control. Thousands of people were killed in the ensuing violence, and thousands more are missing. It's not just the cartels doing the vanishing. Mexican Marines were deployed to the border city of Nuevo Laredo in 2018 to help dismantle cartels in that sector of the Mexican state of Tamaulipas, a state under a do-not-travel warning from the U.S. State Department due to crime and the risk of kidnappings. The Mexican Marines, La Marina, were behind a wave of kidnappings of several Nuevo Laredo residents, including a U.S. citizen. We're talking today with freelance reporter Jay Weston Phippen, who wrote about the kidnappings in a 2020 article in Politico. We're also talking with director Andrew Glazer, whose documentary Spring of the Vanishing tells the story of the months of denial and redirection by the Mexican government over the disappearances. It also shares the grief, desperation, and frustration by the mothers and wives of the kidnapped. Phippen is a producer on the film. He explains how he first became aware of the disappearances.
So originally back in 2010, 2011, I was living in Arizona and I would go into Juarez quite a bit. And I had a group of friends who were local journalists and we would follow the murders around each night because that was their job to take video pictures and some of them were radio reporters. And at that time, there were about 8 murders each day. And so all the material that they gathered over the night would show up on the morning news. And sometimes we'd run into people who talked about men in uniforms or just kind of more plainly that the military had come and kicked in their door, dragged away their son or their husband, or that the military had come and just shot one of their kids or their husband. You know, for a while, I'd wanted to write a story about the consequences of what happens when a country unleashes its military and asks them to perform kind of domestic policing tasks. And I heard about what happened in Nuevo Laredo because the women in the summer, I believe it was around May, June, they had shut down the international trade bridge in Nuevo Laredo, where each day 15,000 semi-trailers moved back and forth across the border. It was a little wire story, and it mostly talked about how much money this protest had cost both countries. It was in the millions of dollars.
When protests and disturbances closed one of the main cargo bridges, that very much came onto our radar because it was affecting directly the 15,000 trailer trucks that are crossing back and forth over the river every day.
So after that, I had reached out to some of the women. I started talking with Raimundo Ramos, who is a local human rights activist in Nuevo Laredo, who was kind of organizing them and guiding them and showing them, you know, how to draw more attention and how to get results from the Mexican government.
What was interesting to me is that there is that perception in Mexico that law enforcement is corrupt. And I did not realize that perhaps there was a different level of scrutiny when it came to the Mexican military and the Mexican Marines. And I'm curious as to the obstacles that you found in doing this investigation of really getting the government to understand that it is their military that was kidnapping people for really no cause other than just on a minor suspicion that they may have been involved with cartels. But could racism be also involved in perhaps these disappearances? Because I think a lot of people might not realize that there is a racism within Mexico itself. Weston?
Yeah. So one thing that you said is trying to get the government to realize. I think the government is well aware of this because this has been going on for a long time. You know, it's not just in Nuevo Laredo. It's not just in Juarez or Tijuana. I mean, it's in Veracruz, Michoacan, Guerrero. Like, everywhere you have a heavy military presence, there are human rights abuses. And nonprofits like Amnesty International and WOLA in Washington, D.C., I mean, they've been talking about this problem since 2007, since the military was deployed nationally in Mexico. So it's not so much convincing the Mexican government as it is getting them to publicly admit that this is an issue. As to the racism, part of this investigation was trying to understand why it happened and why the Marines chose these people to disappear or to kill. And one of the closest things that I've come to is that these units are rotated about every 6 months, you know, from different parts of the country. And the idea of that is that they're not long enough there to be corrupted by the local cartel. But that also means you're gathering people who are not from the north of Mexico or not from the border, are not used to seeing cars without license plates, is often the case, driving around the streets. And so when you put these soldiers who are not trained to investigate, and they're not trained to collect evidence or really to make arrests, when you have them in the streets performing police tasks, they just look, oh, that guy has a tattoo. He looks like a malandro, right? He looks like a narco. Or this car is driving around and, yeah, it has a Texas license plate, or it has no plates, or it's just an SUV with dark tint on the windows. Let's follow them and pick them up for questioning or something. After these cases that happened in 2018, I think it was 2023 or 2024, you had a U.S. citizen from San Antonio who found out that he was going to be a father, and he had a lot of friends in Nuevo Laredo and some family still living on that side of the border. So he went out with his friends, and they were drinking and having fun in Nuevo Laredo out late at night. But, you know, they were in a quote-unquote suspicious-looking SUV, so you had the National Guard follow them, and the guys got freaked out. They didn't pull over. And so the National Guard just fired a bunch of rounds, I think 117 rounds into the back of the truck, killed a bunch of them. Some of them fell out on the street, and the soldiers walked up, shot these guys in the back, killed a U.S. citizen, and said, oh, well, you know, they had guns and they fired on us first. Well, the federal government investigated and they couldn't find a gun on any of these kids.
The gist of the article was that there was a U.S. citizen, again, who was one of these missing. And the article, and in turn the film Spring of the Vanishing, also involves talking to these women whose family members, sons, husbands, have been kidnapped and killed or disappeared. And so Andrew Glazer, a director of Spring of the Vanishing, I'm wondering how you became aware of this particular incident. Was it through the article that Weston wrote in Politico?
Yes, it was. I had actually filmed my last documentary for Showtime in Nuevo Laredo back in 2019. And when I was there, and it's sadly not unusual, but I noticed there were a lot of missing persons signs scattered around town. But the film I was working on was about a baseball team that was playing on both sides of the border, and I didn't really have time from following that team to investigate what was going on, and that wasn't what I was there to do. So when a friend in 2020 saw Weston's article, he sent it to me and said, isn't this what you were talking about? And I read it with great interest because it answered a lot of the questions of what I had seen and also raised many more. What I have tried to do since I've gone on my own as an independent production company, after having been on staff at a number of large newsrooms, is find ways of bringing reporting, kind of turning it into a cinematic film, character-driven film. And Weston's article seemed like a perfect opportunity to interrogate some big subjects in an area that I was curious and interested about. And there was a very compelling spine of the story about an American kid who disappeared, and the U.S. consulate and officials who typically hop to it when an American goes missing didn't seem to do it with the level of energy that you'd expect. And so that kind of pulled me into what I thought would be a compelling narrative. And certainly that kid's mom is a really compelling person with a lot of drive and a lot of very open emotion, and was open to having us film her experience. And so it was kind of the perfect convergence of story, subject, and character, and active storyline that we thought would make a good film.
When you were talking to a lot of these family members, Andrew, when you were making this film, did a lot of them feel any trepidation, any fear for telling their stories because, you know, loose lips sink ships and they will get you murdered in Mexico?
Actually, I was amazed at the courage that they all had. I think the problem we had, rather than finding someone who was willing to talk, was figuring out we couldn't have everyone's story and everyone's voice in the film. So finding a way of navigating that. But these women, and they primarily are women, wives and mothers of the missing and the dead, they for years now have been incredibly brave in marching publicly and advocating and speaking to media and pushing for their case and directly challenging military in the streets at times. So talking to me, and Weston, to be fair, had also done a lot of legwork in advance for his article, but they were ready to talk and that was not a problem. And I really admire them for their courage in doing that.
Andrew Glaser is director of Spring of the Vanishing, a documentary that tells of the dozens of men and boys who went missing and murdered at the hands of Mexican Marines in a period of about 4 months in the Mexican border city of Nuevo Laredo. Journalist J. Weston Phippen is producer on the film and wrote the political article that inspired it. Our conversation continues when we come back.
Support for this podcast of Fronteras comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company. By investing in local communities and rewarding policyholders for prioritizing safety, they are building a more resilient Texas. More at texasmutual.com/texansgetit. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Jorge Antonio Hernandez Dominguez was born in Dallas to parents who were living in the U.S. without legal status. The family moved to Mexico so that Jorge's mom, Maria Elena, could get her immigration documentation in order. They settled in the border city of Nuevo Laredo, a city she and Jorge knew had a reputation for danger.
And he goes, "You see, they disappeared. What would you do if something happens to me? What in the world are you talking about? You're a U.S. citizen. You just have to show your passport and ID and everything. Nobody's going to do nothing to you. Why are you afraid?"
Jorge disappeared on April 4th, 2018. He's just one of dozens who were disappeared or murdered at the hands of U.S.-trained Mexican Marines who were stationed in Nuevo Laredo to combat cartel activity. Jorge has never been found. The film Spring of the Vanishing details these disappearances, the policies that ultimately led to these crimes, and the repercussions they've had on victims' families. Today, we're talking to the film's director, Andrew Glaser, and journalist and producer, J. Weston Phippen. News of U.S. citizens who are kidnapped in foreign countries often make it to the top tiers of government and media headlines. Jorge was a U.S. citizen. Phippen says he did not get equal treatment.
I mean, the kid is American, and he goes missing on April 4th, 2018. About 6 months later, a teacher from North Carolina was backpacking around the Sierra Madre in Chihuahua, up in the mountains, and he goes missing.
This is one of the last known photos of Patrick Braxton Andrew. The North Carolina teacher was last seen 2 weeks ago in Urique, a small Mexican village popular with hikers.
And the difference between the reaction by the United States between those two different cases is astounding. With this teacher from North Carolina, who was a white guy, the DEA reached out to the embassy. The FBI was helping out. Within days, the governor of Chihuahua had deployed over 100 police officers to search the mountain and the hills and the canyons up there. They had drones. They had search dogs. They found the kid. He had been killed. But it is a really extremely different reaction. And I've talked with former State Department people, people who worked in the embassy, people who worked in consulates around Mexico. I also talked with a former DOD attaché, just trying to figure out how big of a priority is a missing American in Mexico, right? Or anywhere. And they all said, oh, it's extremely important to us. We send a frontline cable to the embassy, and that cable should go from Mexico City up to Washington, D.C. And that information should then go to the National Security Council and presumably make it up to the president, who was Trump at the time. That didn't happen, though. We didn't have the same reaction.
So we got to the consulate. I put the report there. I told the guy my son was taken by the Marina. He goes, nah, what was he doing? He wasn't doing nothing. I was like, real mad. You better call those.
If there were credible accusations that Mexican authorities were carrying out disappearances, we would have had that on our radar for sure. And if it had involved American citizens, it would have been our first order of business. But in the confusion that is Nuevo Laredo, we were just as likely to have thought that the cartel was behind disappearing these people.
A couple of these people said, when you're working in Mexico, there are kind of two different piles of people. There's everybody else, and there's missing Mexican Americans. And the assumption, which is wrong, but this is just how the State Department and U.S. officials and working in Mexico operate. If you're Mexican American and you go missing in Mexico, you were probably up to something no good.
I was at the Fiscalía, the Attorney General here in Nuevo Laredo, and put a complaint there for my son missing. And they were like, haha, La Marina. There's more people coming over here and saying the Marina took their kids. I wonder what they were doing. Hey, my son wasn't doing nothing. I don't care what you're thinking.
Maria, the mother of this 18-year-old U.S. citizen, she met with the FBI twice. And the first officer met her in the customs building in Laredo and just kind of flat out told her, I'm really sorry this happened. Are you sure it was the Marines? And also, there's nothing that we can do. Mexican police can't come over here and knock on doors. We can't do the same thing. And while that's true to a degree, the FBI has border liaisons posted all along the U.S.-Mexico line, and their kind of primary job, or what takes up most of their time, is helping track down missing U.S. citizens in Mexico and leveraging their relationships and kind of the power of the United States to help find them. I couldn't really find any connection or any reason to believe these people were connected to any sort of quote-unquote crime in the city. But what you have is just the military doing what the military is trained to do, which is to kill people, not to arrest someone, not to question them, not to investigate or gather evidence or anything. And that is a huge problem in Nuevo Laredo, as we saw through these murders and disappearances and tortures of people. And the same thing is happening to a degree all across Mexico.
And to a degree here in the U.S., it just made me think of when the Marines were being sent to Los Angeles recently for crowd control for the protests. And people were worried the Marines are trained to kill. What are they doing crowd control? So there are a lot of parallels from what's happening across the border to what is happening here right now in the U.S. And Andrew, I'm sorry, I interrupted. Go right ahead.
No, it actually dovetails nicely into what I was going to say, which is there seemed to be, from the consul general, at least, who's the voice of the U.S. government in Nuevo Laredo, a blanket credulity given to the Mexican military in what they were doing there.
Why would a professional military organization resort to tactics like that? It is because they are dealing with an intense guerrilla war in which any tactic that can be used against your opponent is fair game.
Well, he didn't talk about specifically the disappearance of Jorge. He did say that the Mexican Marines were fighting an insurgent battle against heavily armed enemies, and, you know, bad things are going to happen when you have bad guys fighting with big guns against the military. And so it seemed like there was not a lot of scrutiny given to the military by the U.S. government at the time of this operation in Nuevo Laredo.
Which we also need to say the military was trained by the U.S.
Trained, armed, and often operating on intelligence provided by the U.S. So yeah, the idea that the military was committing human rights abuses, which were pretty well documented and publicized by the mothers at the time, would seem to be written off by the U.S. government that was closest to it, which would be the U.S. consulate in Nuevo Laredo, confronted with evidence and with protests and with clearly a growing toll of disappeared over that short period of time. The U.S. government representatives in Nuevo Laredo discounted it as either that the people who were protesting were pawns of the cartels and part of a misinformation campaign to try to shut down the operation, or that the military, the Mexican military, that were doing these horrific things and that were fairly well documented, were simply fighting, you know, a difficult war, and bad things happen in war.
Well, Weston, at the end of your article, it ended with Raimundo, this human rights activist who was helping organize a lot of these women and their protests, with him demanding an apology from Mexico and from the Marines. And in between that article and the release of that film, that apology did happen. Can you give us maybe a few more details as to what that apology entailed, and as to whether it was enough for the families of the missing and of the killed?
Yeah, so I think the mothers have always said an apology is never enough. What they're really looking for is their missing children and husbands. I mean, they want to know what happened to them. They want a body to bury so that they can have some place to come and mourn. Some of the mothers still think that their missing kids might still be out there, but the military has hidden them in a prison somewhere, as has happened in the past, under different names. The apology itself, though, it was pretty monumental, because this is the first time that SEMAR, the Mexican Navy, and as far as I'm aware, the Mexican military at all, has ever publicly apologized for human rights abuses.
El pasado 9 de abril, la Fiscalía General de la República ejecutó orden de aprehensión en contra de 30 elementos navales, a fin de que las autoridades encargadas...
When the disculpa pública came, they were going to say, "I'm sorry, we took your kids, I'm sorry." I wasn't approving that. I was against that. Because where's our sons? I want my son. And then they can say, "I'm sorry."
It was a big deal. But it still falls short of what the women want and have always wanted, which is answers. They want the truth. They want someone to be held accountable. And the Mexican government had arrested 30 Marines, but the majority of those soldiers were released.
Well, Weston, the film was screened not too long ago here in San Antonio at Cine Festival, a Latino film festival, one of the longest running, if not the longest running one in the country. And you were here for the screening, and you were accompanied by some of the women who are featured in this film. Can you tell us a little bit about their experiences, what they thought of the film? Because I understand that some of them had never seen the film prior to that screening.
Yeah, the festival was wonderful, and it was really well put together. But the best thing for me, and kind of the most nerve-wracking beforehand, was this was going to be the first time that several of the women who were in the film had seen it. And I try to put myself in that mindset. These women have been doing so much for years to try to bring attention to this, to try to get some justice, to get someone in the government to listen to them. And it's a lot on Andrew and I to try to you know, do justice to their story and to try to make a film that will engage an audience and get them concerned, get them on their team, and, you know, start asking these questions as well. During the film, you know, it was pretty emotional for them. And I think after they saw it, for the most part, it was really nice to hear what their thoughts on it. I think they really appreciated it and they really liked it. They told me that they were just really happy that the story is getting out there more.
Andrew, I'm wondering if, you know, maybe when you are making these documentary films like Spring of the Vanishing, when there is a filmmaker or there is a book or there is an article, there is something that will shine an extra light on some of these injustices, sometimes that gets the gears in motion to actually get something done. Do you think that may be the case, perhaps, with these vanishings? And has it been the case for you in the past with other films you've been involved in?
So with films, it's hard. And with this particular film, it doesn't have distribution yet. So we're trying to find a home where lots of people can watch it. We'll be talking about taking it on tour in public places, at libraries, at universities, and other places where hopefully we can get eyes on it from people who both should know about it and also hopefully people who can affect change. So that's the objective, and we're kind of rolling it out slowly right now. As far as other work that I've done, I mean, I have kind of come over from news. So I've only made one other feature film as a director, and that was the one in Nuevo Laredo that aired on Showtime. That was a film about a Mexican league baseball team that had started to play half of its home games in Laredo, Texas. They were based in Nuevo Laredo, and it was at the time when, during Trump's last administration, when he was talking about building a wall, and I wanted to show what I believed was some of the artifice behind trying to divide two places that were so connected, whether you like it or not. And my goal, and what I think got that sold to Showtime, was it wasn't polemical. I wanted to just show, not tell. It was a story about a baseball team, but we showed kind of the fluid lines between both sides of the border. And so while I can't quantify if that had an impact, I'm guessing that the subject opened it up to people who might not have watched a film that was clearly a film critical of Trump's border policies, but was a, you know, quote unquote sports film. I kind of, when I was pitching it, said it was a border film wearing a baseball uniform. So I hope people who may have been resistant to open their eyes to that, to what I was trying to tell, I'm hoping that they were able to watch a film and maybe have some of those ideas sneak in. But it's hard to tell. In news, it's a lot easier. You get something on the front page or on TV and there's accountability instantly. With films, it's sometimes a slower roll. Where you're changing minds or feelings, but might not have an immediate impact on policy.
Kind of piggybacking off of the question for Andrew, I mean, the U.S. has a long relationship with Mexico, and all it takes is some conversations with our elected officials to tap on the shoulder of their colleagues in Mexico, and something could happen, right? All it would have taken to have more awareness about Jorge's disappearance was someone in the DEA or the embassy down there or State Department up in Washington, D.C. to say, hey, you know, this is a priority for us. What's going on with this? So while these women on the ground can feel hopeless at times, Andrew and I are really hoping that this does get in front of the right eyes, and that, you know, someone who's elected to do this job follows through and does their job.
Jay Weston Phippen is a freelance journalist and producer on Spring of the Vanishing, a documentary that tells of the kidnapping and murder of dozens of citizens of Nuevo Laredo over a period of 4 months at the hands of Mexican Marines. Phippen wrote the 2020 Politico article on which the film is based. He's currently writing a book on the same topic. We're also speaking with Andrew Glazer, director of Spring of the Vanishing. Glazer is a filmmaker and an award-winning journalist and the founder of Mission Critical Productions. You can find a link to Jay Weston Phippen's original 2020 article at tpr.org. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Marian Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Thanks for listening.